Hello, my name is Chris Snipes, and you are listening to The Melt. Before we get into the interview with Mike DeMonte, the author of Punk Rock and UFOs, let's hear someone's account of their alien abduction experience.
My name is Tammy, and I live in Nashville, Tennessee. And on the night of February 20th, 2016, I believe I was abducted by aliens. I went to bed at about 10:30 that night, and I was very tired, so I went to sleep right away. My consciousness began with being in a waiting room. It was dark there, and there was a large window in front of us, but we couldn't see anything out of it. And I say we because this waiting room had rows of chairs, like in the waiting room of a doctor's office. And there were people sitting in the chairs, and they were mumbling and talking, but I didn't hear anything that they said. There was the sound of a TV in the background, but I couldn't place where the TV was. I didn't see it in any direction that I looked. There was a voice behind me, like someone talking to me from over my left shoulder. And there was also a telephone on a table by a chair. And it was like an old-fashioned telephone, like a Bell telephone with push buttons. And every now and then it would ring. And I would pick up the phone when it would ring, but I couldn't tell you what would happen after that. There are many gaps in my memory where I jump from event to event. And I believe it was in transitioning me from one place to another. And this voice behind me told me that the man who was standing in front of me was someone that I went to high school with. And I didn't recognize him. He was a rotund man. He had brownish red hair. And he had a closely cropped goatee that was the same color as his hair. He had a baseball cap on and a sweat jacket. And the cap and the jacket were black. He had blue eyes, and he had a very friendly face. And so I didn't feel afraid of him. But I remember telling him that I was cold-hearted by nature. And at the same time, I felt very drunk. It seemed as if there would be suddenly a drink in my hand. And I remember the drinks tasting very good and enjoying them. And I felt drunk almost the entire time I was in this room. I left the room, but I can't recall leaving the room, and suddenly I was moving. It's as if I was riding on something like a golf cart, and I was at the very front of it, but I wasn't driving. I felt like the driver was behind me, but I was sitting on this cart. And I was moving down this, what seemed to be, what my perception of it was like an empty street with nothing but small lights along the way, like tiny street lights. But there wasn't any buildings, there wasn't any ambient lighting of any kind other than these tiny lights, and I was moving past them very quickly. I could see off in the distance that there was a lighted area, and it looked like the side of a building. It was large and it was white, and as we were coming up to it, I was still feeling drunk, but with the motion and my feeling of drunkenness, I started to not feel very good physically. And I remember saying out loud, "I hate this feeling of being kidnapped by aliens." Suddenly, I was lying on a table, but it felt very comfortable, almost like a gurney of some kind. And I was warm, and I felt comfortable in my body, but on my left hand, between my thumb and my forefinger, I was pinching another finger, and that finger felt very rubbery and very long, and I was pinching it with all my might, and I was trying to dig my thumbnail into this finger as hard as I could, and I remember struggling to stay strong so that I can continue pinching this finger. Somehow that finger got out of my hand, and I struggled to try and find it again, but I didn't. My next memory was still on this table, but I was in a room, and the room was oval. It was a large oval room, and as I looked up, I could see ascending tiers and the silhouettes of people that were looking down. When I looked to my left, there was someone leaning over my left shoulder, and they were leaning over from my left shoulder and looking as if they were in my abdomen area or my chest area. When he looked up from at me, I could see that he was gray. He had no hair, and when he turned around and we met eyes, his eyes were small and almond-shaped and very wrinkled, like he was squinting, or maybe old. His skin was a greenish-gray in the light. And when I saw him, I started to growl. I started to growl like an animal. And I didn't know what to do other than that. I remember when I was very young, my father told me that if I ever felt like someone was going to attack me, to start acting crazy. And for some reason, I think that I engaged that memory and began growling like I was an animal. When I started to growl, the being that was leaning over me suddenly let go. The next memory that I have is being back in my bed, but there was a large light above me, and it was as if it was lit with neon blue. And what it reminded me of was an LED flashlight. That's what it looked like, and it was shining down on me. In the distance, I heard something that sounded like a diesel engine. And that sound just faded away. It didn't stop like someone turned off an engine. It didn't fade away like someone accelerated and drove away and the sound eventually faded. But it just faded out. I laid in my bed for a minute. I was very disoriented. I looked at the clock, and it said 12:02. I sat up for a minute. I have a very hard time with my eyes transitioning from dark to light, and so I have to do that gradually to prevent my eyes from having pain. But when I sat up on the side of my bed and turned the light on, there wasn't any pain. It was as if my eyes had already been adjusted to the light. When I was in that oval room, it was pretty well lit, but it wasn't bright. At that point, I didn't know what to think. And so I tried to call someone, but I didn't get an answer. It was very late, and I honestly didn't expect anyone to answer. And so I sat up for several hours, and then I did eventually fall back to sleep. The next morning, I went into my living room, and I sat in a chair. And then I finally got a hold of someone. They told me to look on my body to see if there were any kind of marks. And so I did that. And there was no mark that I could see. And so I didn't know whether I had been punctured anywhere. It didn't seem like that had happened. But I found a ball bearing on the floor. And I have no idea where that ball bearing came from. It was kind of large. It was about the size of the end of my index finger. And so I've kept that. When I started to do some research on other alien abduction victims and them telling their stories, there were a few common threads. The sound of the diesel engine that was loud and then fading away. Other abductees have said that it was the sound of the engine that they heard while they were on the alien craft. And because my memory is spotty from transition to transition, it could have been the case, I don't know. The other common thing was what the clock read when I noticed it, 12:02. Other alien abductees have mentioned that their clock read very sequential numbers, like 3:33 or 2:22. And so I thought that might have been a correlation. At this point, 2.5 years later, I believe very much that I was abducted by aliens that night. The next night, when I went to bed, it took me about an hour to finally get to sleep. But I remember saying out loud, just to the space in the room, "We're done. Don't ever come back again." I've not had any more experiences that I can recall.
Next up, we have an interview with Mike DeMonte. His most recent book is Punk Rock and UFOs, True Believers. And it's a really fun book. It really, really is. It's like the chewable red pill. It's something that's not too serious and oppressive, but deals with some pretty big and dark matters. And I think mixing punk rock in with it is appropriate in this sense. It has that sort of fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants DIY sort of aesthetic about it. And I, of course, appreciate that because that's where I came from. I kind of came to my own in the bordering of the new wave scene of the 80s and the punk rock scene that was happening around that same time. And it really influenced my aesthetic as far as, you know, I resonated with that attitude about life. Like, you know, rules not necessarily are meant to be broken, but just because they're rules doesn't need to dictate how seriously you take them. There are good rules that have a perfectly good purpose, and there are rules that are just foolish and outdated. I begin the interview by asking Mike what drove him to write the Punk Rock and UFOs series of books.
Well, the first book, it just kind of happened. You know, sometimes you just feel inspired to do something. I've never written a full book prior to that. You know, I was at the time, what was I doing at the time? Oh, I just started teaching. Previously, I worked at the Eastern Chronicle. So it's a different type of writing. I was a journalist. I covered music and sports. And so, you know, it's a different style of writing, you know, writing news stories on a deadline and writing very concise. And but a book was something I kind of, in the back of my head, I always wanted to do. And then one day I just felt inspired and I just started to do it. And after the first book came out, Cryptozoology Meets Anarchy, people started wanting me to be on shows and they wanted me to be in their podcasts and radio. And it was very, very flattering for me just because it's like, I didn't feel like I was anyone in terms of in the UFO field to be taken seriously yet. And then next thing you know, like I said, people started reaching out. And then to me that, you know, you always kind of envision these things you'd like to do. You like to write books, you know, make t-shirts, like, you know, with your stuff on it. Like, but it's like, why not just do it? And then that kind of gave me the spark to then eventually write another one just because, you know, just from being on everyone else's shows and meeting a bunch of people and doing more research. And I really had a better idea in the direction of True Believers, the second book as well. So I love writing. It's something I've always been passionate about, and I believe I've always been good at it. So writing the books was just a really easy sell for me to do.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you had an interest in all of this stuff beforehand. Where did all that start? Were you always kind of digging in the metaphysics section of your school library, or how did that happen?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. You know, I always love to hear people's responses to this because everyone's story usually starts somewhere. And it kind of makes you like want to dig back in your own past to see if maybe there's something else besides, under the surface in terms of, you know, why you're interested in it. For me, I loved reading growing up. My mom really encouraged my reading, and every month I would get these Time Life books. It was like a hardcover book series, and each month would be a new topic. And as soon as I got the Mysterious Creatures book, and then there was like the UFO books, Mysterious Places, all of those really just kind of stood out to me for some reason. Was the idea of something that could be real, but at the same time, it still captivated my imagination as something that was full on fiction as well. So it kind of like fell in between. Mm-hmm. So that's when I kind of got involved, interested in the unknown. And then, you know, my interest, you know, through the years kind of went up and down, but I always kind of thought it was really cool. I never was a big X-Files guy as a kid, but when it came on TV, I always thought, like, the concept of it was really cool. Even though I didn't watch it often, I just thought, like, oh, this is such a cool idea. But at the time, I was doing other things, like reading comic books and playing with toys and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But, always at a young age, I was always kind of questioning things, so.
Yeah. Absolutely. Where does the punk rock aspect come in?
So that's always a really good question. And I think that's why the books and the brand, it kind of works because people always ask about it. And I always tell people, you know, it's not necessarily punk rock music, even though that's obviously played a role in my life as well. It's the kind of the rebellious nature of what we choose to believe in and what we choose not to believe in. You know, what do we rebel against in terms of our beliefs and what do we accept? And also, too, you know, ufology, cryptozoology, they're underdog sciences. No matter how mainstream they slowly become, Same thing with punk rock bands. You know, a lot of punk rock bands, they always have that underdog mentality, no matter how big they are. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you go to, you know, look at The Clash, look at Ramones, and even, you know, look at Green Day and, you know, Blink-182. Even though those are gigantic bands, they still have that underdog mentality coming up. So I definitely draw the parallels, you know, kind of between that style of music and this style of research.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way. It's a way of life. Punk
yeah.
rock.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'm from that school too, but probably a different generation of that school than you are. I was more the Clash, Sex Pistols, Ramones. You know, yeah, late 70s, early 80s uh-huh. punk. Yeah, for sure.
The OG stuff.
Yeah, exactly. What? So why is it that the UFO discussion is an important one to you? What do you think that needs to be
me?
Talked about?
Like personally?
Yeah.
Well, for me personally, I think it's really important just because I think the answers kind of really, or the process of getting to the answers, really could solve a lot of, you know, Earth's greatest questions and mysteries. But personally for me, I always like to kind of dig deep in what people believe in and why they choose to believe in that. And, you know, it's hard to have serious conversations with everyday people about this stuff. I think lately, though, people are more open-minded, and, you know, this isn't the 1940s where people were ashamed to tell, you know, that they saw something in the sky. You know, I wish everyone had that mentality back then, to just who cares what people think, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say that in 2019, living in a big city, not living in a small town. But it just, you know, I was interviewing a guy named Jeffrey Kripal, mm-hmm. and in his book, I don't know if he said this in his book, or I think I said it when I was interviewing him. He's a professor of religious studies. He's written quite a few really awesome books. And he said that paranormal or these unusual occurrences are as frequent as water. And obviously that was an exaggeration, but what it means is these things happen way more frequently than we think. These types of sightings and these types of weird occurrences. So they're happening all the time. They're out there. People see them. People report them. It's not this taboo thing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's slowly, you know, it seems like it's mostly been relegated to this area of kind of a novel, fun sort of thing that nobody really takes seriously. I think it's slowly becoming more sophisticated, and people are getting together and sort of corroborating their stories a little bit more. And I think it's slowly rising out of the area of the field of thought that people scoff at, serious scientists and stuff like that. I think that's really exciting too.
Absolutely. I can't talk too much on this, but a couple months ago I filmed a pilot for a show which may or may not become anything. And one of the guests on the show, myself and one of the other judges, were talking, and we brought up these scientists were studying Skinwalker Ranch, and one of the other judges was like, well, what do you mean scientists? Like, that can mean many things, and scientists could have certain biases. And I'm like, absolutely, but in this case, these were traditional scientists who were actively seeking to study something that was not in their control. So even like within the scientific community, you know, there's been research, there's been more experimental stuff coming forward, you know, in the past couple of years as well. So I think it's an exciting time to be interested in the stuff, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's becoming more and more, especially Kripal has done a lot of studies where he's really trying to show the scientific efficacy of these things and that they actually happen, like near-death experiences and spirits and all that stuff. I think it's about time, you know, like it's long ago been relegated to this, you know, only stoners and you know, new age freaks are interested in this stuff.
Yeah.
Now everyday people are interested. More and more people are coming forward with their abduction experiences and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's really exciting. I like it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You know, Jason McClellan, his book, Only Weirdos See UFOs. It's a really cool, I always tell people that's a really cool starting point if you're into this stuff, because it really smashes down that idea that only weirdos see UFOs.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really clever title, but it does really, you know, it introduces people who are involved in this stuff to basically, you know, all the big players, all the big cases throughout history. But it really does say, hey, look, you know, it isn't just stoners and weirdos, you know, mm-hmm. everyday people, doctors, you know, everyone had these experiences.
Absolutely. How much trust do you put in mainstream media?
So I used to work in media. I worked for one of the largest one of the largest newspaper companies in the country for about 7 years. And, you know, people have their opinions on the media. And I mean, I've worked in it, so I know that there isn't a, what's your looking for, like a specific, like evil plan to like hide this stuff, you know? It's basically what sells and what clicks is kind of, you know, what's the big story, you know what I mean? You look at print media, web media, and broadcast, and they're all kind of different monsters. Yes, they're definitely gonna all looking to monetize and make money, but you know, the front page story of a print newspaper may be different than the lead story on the 6 o'clock news. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's different. You know, I think in terms of this topic, obviously the New York Times report that came out last year that Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal did about the Pentagon UFO money. I think that's important because that's a mainstream source putting that on the front page. And, you know, that just speaks volumes in terms of why this is slowly becoming more respected. Because if someone says, hey, well, look, the New York Times covered it, you know, it's on the front page, you know, maybe this isn't so cuckoo after all. And then they read the article and they see Harry Reid's name, they see John Podesta's name. So they go, oh, wow, these are major players who believe in this stuff. You know, mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, but the thing is like, you know, we've known this stuff for years. You know, we've known that there's been high profile people in government involved in this stuff. So it's kind of like, oh, now you believe us, you know?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
But still just having that out there. Even like, I mean, I think it's hard because I've been on local media here when that came out, when that story initially came out. But since then, I've been trying to do some more stuff, and it's a hard sell. You know, like, hey, you know, I have another book coming out. It's about this, mm-hmm. you know, topic. I come on in the morning and say, oh, we don't know UFOs, but it's like last year when the New York Times did it, you guys wanted to have everyone on and talk about
exactly.
it. So I think it's kind of when you have the really large stories and the really large outlets pick it up, the other mm-hmm. ones follow.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that frustrates me about those events though, is that they seem to come out in big bursts and then it's not consistent. You don't hear anything for months and months and months. So it's
hard because one of the things I mentioned in one of my first books is there's really no follow-ups to these stories. Like if there's a sighting, which sometimes it's hard to do, it is, if you're a reporter or you're an organization to allot all that time and manpower into a UFO story. But, you know, if you see, you know, a 2-minute segment about a UFO sighting on the news, then that's usually it, then it disappears. Mm-hmm. You know, you usually don't see anything after that, anyone digging deeper. And that's not necessarily the fault of the journalists. They may just not have the authority, you know, to do so in term, you know, from their organization. But that is something, even though, it's not necessarily the fault of one person. That's just kind of how it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That sure. Even though I would like to see more follow-ups to this, just sometimes they don't happen.
Have you had any personal experiences with UFOs?
Yeah, I've had a few sightings. The first one I had was the traditional orb sighting. Second one was kind of more of a cylinder sighting. And ever since then, I mean, every time you look up in the sky, you question everything you see now. It was funny because I said earlier how, you know, these things these happen all the time. I have friends who are always texting me now and people reaching out to me, hey, I saw this, what is this? And it's funny because I always tell this story because it just to show that it's so frequent. Last summer I was in Chicago with my fiance and her friends and we were taking this boat tour and they all saw something. And the one time I was down on my phone, you know, not paying attention, I missed it. And I asked other people on the boat to make sure they weren't like messing with me. And yes, other people saw it. Like, and I did a story on it, punkrockufos.com. And then I had somebody like email me saying, oh, I was on a flight. The person was on a flight to Michigan. And when they were flying over Chicago, they saw something similar. So I'm like, someone else saw it too. So, you know, and so these things happen all the time. It's just crazy to think that, you know, it can happen anytime. Yeah. No, I wish I would see a Bigfoot or something one day. It's one thing I want to do is one day, you know, bucket list, just go in the woods and look for one. I've been watching a preview of a documentary that's coming out. It's called In Search Of by Small Town Monsters, and that's coming out in March. And mm-hmm. it's about 6 episodes on Bigfoot. And I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but it's probably one of the best field studies, documentaries about Bigfoot I've ever seen.
Cool. And,
you know, I always tell people this, you know, I interviewed a couple of years ago, Erin Ryder. She was on Destination Truth. And, you know, that was a TV show, and they had all this financial backing to go research these things, right? But think about it. What is the chance that you go one weekend to look for Bigfoot or look for the Loch Ness Monster or to look for Mothman with cameras, and you're there for a set amount of time and you see that thing, especially something that's so elusive? The percentage is very, very small. And that's something, you know, we always have to explain to people as well. So I think that's another barrier that's kind of in the way of, you know, more people believing in this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you come from a school where you, did you do psychedelics when you were in high school or afterwards?
No, absolutely
okay.
not.
Okay. Straight edge? Were you straight edge punk?
No. I went like 3 or 4 years without drinking, but that wasn't any mantra. No.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah. No,
sometimes that is the kind of the gateway that opens up the, you know, yeah, the crevice to people like realizing that there's a lot more going on than they previously suspected. What do you, okay. How do you think that the paranormal came to be sort of regarded as this pseudoscience and not taken seriously?
I just think because the more I research this, the more you figure out that it can't be measured by traditional science. And as soon as it can't be measured by traditional science, a lot of scientists scoff at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I point people to what happened at Skinwalker Ranch. Real scientists went out there, research scientists, and everything they tried to study, they couldn't. They were the ones who felt like they were being controlled. They saw things that they couldn't record, that they couldn't quantify, that they couldn't explain. So I think you kind of start there by saying, like, look, just because science as we know it can't study or track these things doesn't mean it's not real. It just doesn't mean we don't have the means or we don't have the control over it. That we want.
Yeah, exactly. It's not something you can drag to a laboratory and put under a microscope. Yeah, unfortunately. And there's a lot of, you know, people who engage in psychokinesis or telekinesis and you know, are able to read minds and stuff like that, that plain just don't want to go into a laboratory and be studied. You know, it's like, they're not out to prove anything to anybody, you know, which I can relate to that too. As far as mainstream media is concerned, do you think that there is already sort of this slow disclosure underway? Do you think that's actually happening?
It's hard because, you know, a lot of people believe this is the slow disclosure has been happening through Hollywood and pop culture for years. You know, that's, you know, they said E.T. is apparently, you know, the government's like, yeah, go to Spielberg, yeah, go make E.T. Here's some notes. Like, there's a lot of rumors about that stuff. And I don't know if I fully support that idea that it has to be disseminated that way through, I think that blurs the line slightly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think, you know, aliens and UFOs are so ingrained in pop culture. I think if the truth were to come out, it wouldn't be as big of a shock just because, I mean, I think I read a poll that said something like 60% of Americans 1 year, I can't quote that right now. I don't have it in front of me, but believed in UFOs, whether it was, just the idea of an unidentified flying object, you know, that's saying it was alien or whatever, but they believe in there's something in the sky that cannot be identified. So I think if you start from there, I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of open-minded to these ideas and these possibilities. I think where it becomes a problem is where it kind of goes against a lot of people's historical and religious beliefs. Even though if you study this stuff enough, you see it's kind of intertwined. It's not either one or another. There can be both. They both can kind of coexist. Just at the end of the day, what you previously believed may mean something slightly different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think even, you know, scientific materialists, it's almost like science. Some have called it scientism, which I like that term, but it's like a religion in and of itself. You know, it's like you're taking all of these supposed findings from these supposed experts that, you know, you're supposed to trust with their, they're supposed to be objective and they're out to find just what they find and not have any sort of bias whatsoever. But it seems like, you know, when you start accepting that stuff as rote and stop paying more attention to your own personal experience with reality and the fringes of reality, like that becomes its own sort of religion and you become very passive and you just accept that the universe is what the scientists tell you. And I think that's really short-sighted. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
What do you mentioned that the importance of how that the UFO community should move forward, should sort of organize and have a concerted effort to move forward. What are ways that you think would be good for the UFO community to move forward?
It's hard because I think there's so many people in the UFO community are just so jaded. And if it's not exactly what they want to hear, if it's not 100% full disclosure, they don't want to hear it. And I think it's frustrating because you have people putting in a lot of hard work, a lot of resources, putting in a lot of hard work, and people will scoff at it because it's not this or it's not this or it's not this. And I think, the seeds have been planted within that community, for years now. So it's very divisive. And that's something I learned right away as soon as I got involved actively in researching the community. People, have their opinions on things. And like, for example, like Project Blue Book, history is doing like a fictionalized kind of version of the truth, a TV show. Mm-hmm. And I like the importance of the show. I think it's cool because it can bring more eyes to the topic and get people involved. I don't like the writing of the show. I don't, it's entertaining. I watch it. I think I don't think it's a good show. Like, I just think it's poorly written. And, even something like that, people like, two sides and kind of claw at each other over. So, I think it's hard. It's hard to find a common ground because even if somebody came, if Lou Elizondo or Twist Stars Academy presented full disclosure tomorrow, there'll be, a large percentage of people calling BS on it, saying it's disinformation. So who knows? Mm-hmm. I think, they come forward just by, the UFO community comes together just by being a little bit more open-minded, I guess.
It's easy to see, how groups can get fractured, even groups that are supposedly, sort of subcultures, like they can even divide and infight amongst themselves. Like, come on, guys, there's bigger fish to fry, like, let's unite at least under this umbrella, So you also brought up things like gods and angels being aliens, really. What are some of the things that you came across in your research for these books about that?
It's funny because basically every story from the beginning of time, whether it's in religion, whether it's in early narratives, it talks about things coming down from the sky. And this all goes back to the ancient, the ancient astronaut theory as well. But I think it's just fascinating. No matter what you believe, there's beings coming from the sky. So I think that's always fascinating. No matter, like I said, what religion you believe in, no matter which part of the world you grew up on, there's these stories. And it's fascinating to me that everyone, all these different religions, all these different societies and cultures have these same stories, mm-hmm. or similar stories. And this is even before the means of communication. If it was nowadays, you can easily say, oh, well, you just got on the internet and you just phoned somebody in India and you planned this hoax. But there's none of that, none of that going on. The early Sumerians, people kind of talk about those early Sumerian texts and the things that they put on those tablets. People don't understand that those tablets were very, very valuable. Paper wasn't a commodity. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you had a stone tablet, it was very valuable. Whatever you put on there, it was important. So would they put something blatantly false on something that important? I don't know. It just doesn't seem to make sense that they would waste that opportunity on something that they didn't believe in.
Sure. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And what about, sort of in that same area, what about myths actually maybe even being literal truths instead of this, like it seems like after so much time has passed, it's easy to discard those stories as just that, just stories. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's one of the more fascinating parts of this topic is, you look back even Greek mythology. You have this god, riding on a cloud, throwing thunderbolts, that sounds like to me, what we would know as, maybe like two ships fighting, right? Mm-hmm. So even if everything isn't 100% true in terms of mythology and those stories, there has to be truth in there somewhere. Something originated and those stories came. Now, how much have they been changed throughout the years? We don't know, but I think there's truth somewhere. There has to be truth somewhere in those stories, whether it's literal or something, a little bit more figurative. I think it all kind of stems from something, from reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I like that idea because just in my short life, I've seen how things can get distorted from one generation to another. Like what was a truth for one generation becomes like an old wives' tale a couple of generations down the line. It's like, wait a second, something was really important to this culture, and now it's just like this, you know, this silly little story. It happens so quickly, and over thousands of years, man, the distortion is hard to wrap your mind around. So, I mean, how did this, did studying the UFO community and just the phenomenology of it, did that lead you into other territories too? I mean, we mentioned cryptids a little bit. Have you looked into afterlife stuff? I mean, what is your field of reference here?
I've always been part of a huge fan of cryptozoology too, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot. I've always been into that. Close in proximity is an equal as UFOs. But in terms of, like, in my first book, I referenced a study by Dr. Robert Lanza, who wrote this book on biocentrism. It's basically this idea that our consciousness lives on after we die. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff I read since then. And I know people have written full books on this, but before the UFO community embraced it, and I'm not saying I'm the first person to do that, I'm not, but I feel like I was one of the first people to include that in a book about UFOs. Not write a whole book about it, but kind of mention, hey, I'm going to write about this because this is interesting to me. And this kind of goes with, you know, this kind of goes with, it collaborates with a lot of other people believe too, that's not really related to it. It just kind of, you know, it fits together if you're trying to put together this puzzle. And, you know, some of the stories I read and, you know, that people talk about, when they've had, what's it called? Through hypnosis and regressions, and they've talked about past lives, all these things that sound crazy on paper. You know, that they're able to, you know, travel to, their consciousness is able to travel to these galaxies, and, you know, just basically drawing those conclusions. You know, what if our consciousness lives on when we die, and that's what takes us to these other universes and galaxies and dimensions that we can't get in our physical form? So that was the one conclusion I drew from that initial study, and there's obviously been more studies since then. But in general, in terms of ufology, everything I've been reading about lately is really starting to go into the more quantum physics field and experiencer field. It's really fascinating to me. A book that just came out, gaining a lot of steam, is called American Cosmic by Diane Walsh Pasulka. And read that book a few months ago. I got an advanced copy of it. And it's really fascinating that a lot of these books, years ago, people would have been laughed at. People would have discarded them, threw them away, laughed at it. But now they're getting serious respect because they're digging deeper than just traditional, hey, I saw a UFO. It's now, okay, what's the human experience? You know, what are these people who experienced these things? You know, how do they feel different? What are some of these crazy things that they claim, these abilities they claim, these things that they can do and see that sound out of a comic book, you know? And it's what if, you know, what if it is real? I'm not saying it isn't, but just what if, you know, just trying to find that answer is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, are you more of the school of thought that thinks that aliens are more sort of flesh and blood creatures or interdimensional, coming from inside the Earth? Like, what, all of the above? What do you feel about that?
It's hard to, like, pick just one, you know, because all these theories are really fascinating. There's a lot of good arguments for and against all of them as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I'll go to space. I'll say yes. I think they believe, I believe they come from outer space. They come from planets or dimensions that we can't get to in terms of our technological advances. I also believe that a lot of it is our consciousness. A lot of things I've read about abductions and our ability, especially as humans, there's parts of our brain that aren't being used. There's parts of our DNA that's not being used. And there's people that believe that we can, through little things like cutting out caffeine and meditating and yoga and getting 8 hours of sleep, little things we can do to really increase our abilities as humans. And this apparently has been sitting right here in our head the whole time. And even doing those things opens up this kind of door of consciousness, which I'm not saying helps communicate with aliens or anything like that, but I think that's where people should start. I think a lot of research is starting to go there. Rather just, hey, we need to get a ship that can go, you know, further in space. I think people are starting to say, well, that may not be the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that there was a Roswell crash where things were sort of reverse engineered from that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite books is The Day After Roswell. It's by a guy named Philip Corso. And he claims he was a former Pentagon official, and his job was to take this crash material and then give it to companies and have them reverse engineer, figure out what it was. And if you kind of look back, there was a huge spike in technology from 1947 to the 60s, kind of, and then so forth. You know, we had kind of this break in technological advances, and then all of a sudden, we started getting fiber optics, we started getting lasers, we started getting compact discs, we started getting computer chips. All these things started coming out after the fact, whether it was coincidence or not. Even just kind of unrelated to Roswell, but the latest story I did the other day was a guy that MUFON passed on interviewing him. His story's been out for about 3 years, and it's only, he's maybe posted this link on a few random message boards, and he reached out to me, and I thought his story was worth telling, whether it's true or not. But basically, he claims that he was part of a military experiment where he was given a food source from an alien spaceship. And through this experiment, he believed that his focus improved. And now he's an 83-year-old man, and he swims over a mile every day. He's in tremendous shape. And I think he attributes that a little bit to kind of that experiment. And a lot of people will kind of, on the surface, maybe, you know, laugh at him, but you have to be open-minded, because I'm looking at it as this. This is an 83-year-old man. He's held on to this story for years. Obviously, he couldn't disclose it because he signed military documents to do so. What does he have to gain? You know, but by, if he's trying to hoax, he's not going to get money out of this, telling a story. So it needs to be heard, whether, like you said, you know, people can draw their own conclusions. But this happened before Roswell, too. He said this happened before that. Or right around the same time, I'm sorry.
Yeah, interesting. And there's the whole other classification of UFO abductions called MILAB, MILABs, like military abductions. Have you heard about those? Yeah, where supposedly, you know, the military will come in, and usually has to do with people who had had something to do with, like their parents were involved with the military or something like that, would come in, and these abduction experiences would happen, and they were supposedly masked as alien experiences, but they were actually military. Do you think that there's any credence to that, or have you stumbled across any of that stuff?
I mean, maybe. I just know, you know, they've done a lot of misinformation that the government's put out, and they've done a lot of experiments and stuff that's that they try to, you know, keep under wraps through the years. For sure. I just think it's for them to pull off that experience and make it authentic to somebody who's had the actual experience before would take a lot of drugging.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone who's had an abduction experience, they always, you know, talk about how they don't remember it until, you know, they're kind of put under in a hypnosis or something where your consciousness gets it out. So I feel like you'd have to try to recreate that feeling of being asleep, and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that would be really hard for them to pull off, but it's probably possible. I think that if they wanted to pull off a hoax like that, I think they certainly have the means to do so.
Yeah, there's so many different rabbit holes you could follow, you know. I interviewed a guy named Mike Clellan, who wrote a book on owls and UFO abductees, and lots of masked memories or screen memories of people who see 4-foot owls in place of aliens, you know, which is, I find, incredibly fascinating.
Yeah, me too. There was that movie about that. I forgot what it was called. It was like The Fourth Kind or something. That's not the name of the movie. I'm wrong. But it was basically about that, about the owl experience. And I forgot the name of it. It comes back to me, I'll tell you.
But, please do.
You know, I've been meaning to read his book because that's always fascinating. And even this is really fascinating too. This summer, when I was up in Illinois, I actually added this photo in my book because I saw it. I just happened to see it in the neighborhood. It was a totem pole, and it had all these different layers, and all the faces of these Indian gods were gray. And there was owls on it too. And I thought that was too cool not to take a picture of and include in my book. But I thought that was really telling. And that really helped kind of convey this idea that, hey, this stuff exists in many different cultures and mythologies.
Yeah. I mean, going back thousands of years, it's really crazy. Yeah. How they're all, I mean, owls pop up in mythology and, you know, in UFO experiences and stuff like that. It's just amazing how ubiquitous it is. It's all over the place. Twin Peaks, you know, like the owls are not what they seem, you know, like it just makes you wonder. And he had an idea that maybe these owls were sort of like, you know, somehow they were used as surveillance devices, like, because often people would see owls right before they see a UFO, or, you know, the person would look up and see an owl just out of no place and go and ask it a question, and it would give them this download that they felt that was from some sort of an alien, you know, UFO or something like that. And it's just really amazing stuff. I highly recommend the book. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I've been meaning to read it because I think I wanted to buy it, but it was like $25 on Amazon.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just wait for like a holiday and ask for Christmas. But yeah, it's definitely been on one of the lists I wanted to read. But you know, even if you just think about it for a second without reading the book or knowing much about that history, you could draw a parallel right away. If you just know traditional, like, what does an alien look like? Mm-hmm. Traditional, I mean,
yeah,
it's gray,
yeah,
right? Big eyes, and UFOs come at night.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say the same thing about owls.
Yeah.
So just intrinsically by nature, there's something like a person there that you can begin with. Mm-hmm. And then you go deeper from there.
Sure. How far do you go down the conspiracy rabbit hole? Are you a person that kind of keeps your mind out for those things or mind open for those things? Or do you just, is there a line of credibility that you don't go past?
I think it's okay to have an open mind, but you can't fully go down it because I think it'll drive you crazy. Not like, you know, really, like literally drive you crazy.
Sure.
There's a book called Behold a Pale Horse.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot his name.
William Cooper.
Yes, there you go. And I had to stop reading it. I was like, you know what, this is too much. Like, I only had about two chapters left, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to put this down. Because I feel like I can see how somebody would read that, and they'd get overly paranoid. Everyone's out to get him. But if you read it, it's like, you know, everything about his life seems crazy. And, you know, even like the way he died in real life as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he almost foreshadowed some of these things, too. And he's like, hey, look, they're gonna say that I was this, and I was this. And then when he died, you know, they said he was a tax cheat. He never paid his taxes. So, you know, to me, those super conspiracy books are really fascinating, because even if there's an ounce of truth in there, I think, you know, you can at least, you know, pull that from there.
Yeah, I think the way that I approach those things is like, even if there isn't hard and fast evidence, like, there's often something similar that has happened in history that has been substantiated. So it's like, I think like, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's proof for that, but I could see something like that occurring, you know, like when you think of the Tuskegee experiments and all of the unwitting things that our government has put the American people under, it's easy to see, like, I could see how people can just take that and just run with it, you know, like thinking that,
yeah, you
know, 911 is an inside job, all of that stuff, you know, like things that people get ridiculed about. And it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy too, because there's a lot, since a lot of them can't be substantiated, you know, you're kind of either ranting to a bunch of other people that believe the same thing that you do, or you're just, you don't get invited to parties anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I usually clam up about most of the things that I talk about on this podcast to the general public, but I think it's important for us to get together and talk about these things, because I think that there is a lot of substance and a lot of evidence behind this stuff. And it's more and more, it seems to be mounting to something that's, you know, it's hard to dismiss as just a flight of fancy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So do you have plans for another book? Where are you going to go after this?
Yeah, I like to write as many punk rock and UFOs books as possible.
Mm-hmm.
For me, usually I don't just say I'm gonna sit down and write a book. Usually inspiration has to come.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I wrote punk rock UFOs too, I just felt inspired, just because I was meeting a lot more people, talking to a lot more people, interviewing a lot more people. So I had more of a specific vision than the first book. So I was able to take that and roll with it. And I was also able to kind of flesh out some of the ideas I wanted. So when there is a third book one day, it's going to have to be something kind of like that, where I want to do something. I want to take the idea of, you know, true believers and cryptozoology meets anarchy and just kind of build from there.
Mm-hmm.
And also have a stand on its own as well. I have a few fiction books that are in the works as well. Hopefully, will be coming out soon. Yeah, I'd like to eventually. I like trilogies, so I'd like to eventually have a third punk rock and UFOs book one day.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great. And what about the? What do you think of? What's the? I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the poster in the background reminds me of the Blink 182 guy, Tom DeLonge. Is that his name?
Yeah.
What do you think about what he's doing with his organization that he's trying to get together?
I think, you know, a lot of people were blasting him at first just because of the obvious, oh, who's this rock star? You know, who does he thinks he has all these connections? And he's obviously made some comments and along the way that probably didn't help his cause. But if anyone has followed his career, like I have, you know, obviously I was a huge fan of Blink growing up. And I've met Tom before. I've interviewed him before when he was in Angels and Airwaves and Blink. And no matter what he's involved in, he's very, very passionate. And people shouldn't count him out. He's been told a lot throughout his career, you know, music or whatever, you can't do this. And he's kind of got ahead and done it. And I think the To the Stars Academy, you know, they're slowly making, you know, big moves. You have, I think it's also Lou Elizondo is kind of slowly becoming more of like the face of the company. He does most of the media. Tom's kind of laying back and setting up sort of the fictional aspects of the company, like the movies and the documentaries. Well, the documentaries are nonfiction, but you know, I think they have a TV series coming out, a few other things that he's kind of engineering as well. But I think if anything, I mean, people in the UFO community should applaud the effort because of To the Stars Academy and Tom and Lou Elizondo, that, you know, this Pentagon story became such a big thing. You know, they helped facilitate the release of that footage. So people are, if the end of the day, the only thing they did was get the mainstream media to pay more attention, great. If they do more than that, awesome. And I think they're obviously aiming to do more than that. So yeah, I think it's definitely a good time to be into this research.
And you think that he's eventually wanting to get towards some full disclosure or more partial than...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he's one of those guys who buys into the idea of slow disclosure through pop culture and media. I think a lot of times he says that to justify his company putting out, you know, books of fiction and fictionalized series. I think that's how he justifies it to the UFO community. But at the same time, though, I mean, he's read all the same books that we all have. And he was able to use his celebrity to kind of, you know, meet some high-level people in government. You know, whether they're feeding him truth or not, I mean, that's up to, you know, people decide, that'll be determined. But I mean, if you look at the people on his team, they all have credibility. You know, former CIA, former scientist, Lou Elizondo, former Pentagon official. So there's definitely people there. You know, he wasn't just making this up. So I don't know if a full disclosure, but I think it's going to be, you know, just them. The idea that they facilitated a release, that a previously unreleased footage from the government, that's slight disclosure, right? And sure. One of the book comments I like to make in my book is disclosure doesn't mean anything if people don't care, you know?
True.
I mean, to us, it's probably one of the biggest stories of all time. But to the average person, you know, it may just be like, oh, aliens are real cool.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, it makes me wonder sometimes if there were full disclosure, like, would it be one of those situations where it was headline news for 2 days and then we get back to, you know, fucking Kanye West or something and it just gets swept under the rug or like, you know, like the same story where Jesus actually came back assuming that he was a real dude, you know, like would anybody even bring them into their house and feed him and take care of him and wash his wounds? Probably not, you know.
Probably not. No, he's a refugee from another country, so probably not an American.
Exactly. Yeah. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and God damn it, he is too. Yeah, crazy, craziness. Anyway, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat for a little bit, and I look forward to any more work that you have coming out in the future. I still haven't read your first book, so I still have that to get to, too, but... Do you want to tell the listeners where they can get a hold of you or keep track of what you're doing?
First, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here, and thanks for reading my book. True Believers is way better than the first one. Okay. So I'm glad you read that one first. punkrockandufos.com. I continue my research on there. The website is, you know, some traditional, you know, news stories about UFOs, people reporting sightings to me, people I interview. And there's kind of the more pop culture aspect of it. where I review movies and documentaries and as well. So it's kind of, you know, the little tagline is cryptozoology and culture. So yeah, punkrockandufos.com.
Fantastic. And maybe we can talk again later on down the road.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Feel free to reach out. So. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
So that was a fun little romp. That was an interesting interview. He's a good guy, and I suggest that you go check out his website. The links are in the description below the video, assuming you're watching this on YouTube, which is pretty much where the melt lives right now, until my website goes live, hopefully in mid-July is when I've heard, and I'm sorry for the delay. And it's just a long story. I'll go into it sometime, I'm sure, inevitably. But I've just had a hard time cobbling together a website and finding a home for it on the cheap as much as possible. Which leads me to a good place to plug my Patreon page. www.patreon.com/themeltpodcast. You can go there, and even for $1 a month, you can help out and help me sponsor the show and try and make it bigger and better. I would love to someday do some travel and do some interviews and go to conventions and cover them and, you know, various things in between. And having some funds to do that would be fantastic. Having funds where I can cut down on the menial job that I have at the moment would be incredible. I would love to devote more time to this podcast. But, you know, I'm not asking for anything huge, and I'm not asking for anything necessarily in general. If you want to help out, if you have the inclination to do so, that's where you would go. If not, other ways that you can help are to share this far and wide. Recommend people, point them to the website when it's actually up, which will be www.themeltpodcast.com. And just, spread the word on your local data harvesting social media sites of choice. And I would be greatly appreciative when it's up on iTunes, which should be around the time that the website is live. You can go there and review it and subscribe to it. So, all right. Thank you so much for listening. There's like 4 shows coming up that are going to be incredible. So just stay tuned in the meantime to the YouTube page. And also I have a Facebook page too. All right. Until next time, take care.